Okay, so you were...
We waited for the replacement tank, and then we got the replacement tank, and then Holmes took over his platoon leader. So we had new socks to bring up to our platoon. Doesn't sound like much, but new clean socks for a guy. So we
How often did you get new socks?
Not often.
Not.
I wouldn't change your underwear more often. Like I say, the time I got that shower from the government, that was like really something. Because when I was in Kirchnaumen, Suzanne walked in upstairs one time when I'm there, I was taking a hula bath. That's out of a helmet. I'm sitting in the room with the blanket covering the damn hole. I'm in my socks, taking a bath, and she walked in. She walked out. Because they had a room up there full of apples. Because they used to have that, like trenches with like beets and whatnot. And as they needed them, they would dig the dirt away, and then they would cover it back. And then they would put it through a big machine and cut it up to feed their cattle. In fact, while we were there, they couldn't feed the calf. The calf was drinking the cow's milk. So the guy across the way was amongst them, like the village butcher. He slaughtered it. He kept half. They kept half. And they invited us for Christmas dinner. And we had the half of the calf with them. And she made like an apple pie, like our pizza. Colonel Kudrowski somehow got like the coal briquettes for every house in the town. The trucks dumped in front of the house. But that's all they had, is little briquettes. And when we were sitting at staying around in that room, and we were all singing Christmas carols, and they came out of the room, their room, to listen to us, was the same thing to them to see us.
Yeah.
That was a moment for us too there, with those people. So now we had new socks to bring up to the platoon. It was a great thing to them to get mail and warm clothing and hot food and dry, warm place to sleep. I guess we were always tired, cold, and hungry. We used to jump out of the turret when our column stopped and ran. We, the guys in the turret, would ran to the back of the tank and let the exhaust fumes warm us up by standing there and let the exhaust fumes hit our backs. The driver and assistant driver had the heat of the transmission between them, and they had that heat to keep them warm and also heat their sea rations on the transmission. Uh-huh. We joined our platoon. It was raining for several days, and the night before we were knocked out, we were told to move up to secure positions to outside of Habscheid. Holmes, now we only had one hatch now. This is the old cast hull model. Holmes told me to get out.
Now when you say only one hatch, there was no driver's hatch?
No, and the turret. This was the tank commander's hatch. There was no hatch over the assistant the loader.
The
tank I was in with Gifford, I had my own hatch.
Okay, I see.
But this tank had only one hatch. Holmes told me to trot ahead of the tank, and he took off his luminous watch. Each tank commander had a luminous watch. As I was trotting in front of the tank, I was holding it up in the dark so the operator could see it, hopefully, anyway. So I was soaking wet when I got back into the tank. And when daylight came, all hell broke loose. We were in a wooded area, and the Germans kept dropping mortars and artillery and small arms fire into this woods all around us. And I could see the mortar and artillery rounds getting closer and closer as I was looking through my periscope. We refer to this as bracketing fire. You fire up one, fire back, until they got on target. Finally, I could hear the shrapnel hitting the outside of the tank. Holmes fell down into the turret, and I kept saying, "Holmes, are you hit? Holmes, are you hit?" And Sparsa sure he's hit. We picked him up and put him in a sitting position behind the gun. He had several long cuts on the length of his head, and the OD towel he used as a scarf was soaked with blood. I still say his steel helmet saved his life. I asked the DR Pino for the first aid kit, and I couldn't get it open. It was rusted shut, and DR Pino had to pry it open with a chisel. I bandaged him as best as I could. And then now he's in a lying position on the floor of the tank. He called Gibson up on the radio and told him, "Gibson." He said, "Gib," he says, "we're getting out of here." And with that, two guys from another tank that was knocked out in the woods came into our turret. Now this is five guys with only one hatch together. That was Bob Gladson, and Cecil McFarlane. And this is the funny part of it. McFarlane's carrying a carton of cigarettes with him. Their bogey wheels were shut off. They can't move. And he takes a carton of cigarettes. So the other three guys, now they got the better tank with the two hatches, but still Gibson didn't let them in. He had to lay on the back, three of them were laying on the back deck of Gibson's tank. Now this is the way we should have done it, because we only had one hatch, they had two hatches. So there were five guys in the tank with only one hatch to get out of. Now it's funny to think about it, but one guy, at the time I couldn't remember his name, had a carton of cigarettes with him when he abandoned the tank. All the swell, two tank destroyers were knocked out, and we lost practically the whole company of infantry. The Germans kept pouring on the artillery, mortars, and small arms fire. They knew we were in a small wooded area, and they kept up their fire. Now, my clothes were still damp, and I think I said before, I seriously believe that I think that's what kept me from burning to death in the tank. Gibson then led us up the hill, and he had three guys from the other tank lying down on the back deck of his tank. He stopped to see if we were coming behind him. Just as he stopped, the Germans fired two rounds just in front of his tank. We could hear him say on the radio to his driver, "Kick this tank in the ass, let's go." And he came up the hill next, and the armor-piercing round hit us, and we went from the rear of the to the front of the tank, right through the gas tanks. It landed between the system driver's legs. He told us he had one leg up, his left leg was on top of an ammunition box, so of course it was all wet down, he wanted to get his foot out. So he was lucky it missed him. He said if his leg was down, he would have got his leg would have been torn off. I could see it lying there, fiery hot. You could see it laying, you could look right straight down, it was red hot, fiery red hot. In the meantime, all we were on fire, and the 88 round went through us, through our gas tanks. I yelled, "Let's get out of here." I was on my hands and knees under the gun, waiting for the four of the other guys to get out of the tank turret. Just as I got out, the ammo started to explode and started to make smoke rings from the turret. Big smoke rings come out of the turret. The next tank up the hill got it next. They weren't as lucky as us. The tank commander's heel was shot off, and they all suffered some type of burns on their hands and face. The assistant driver was also injured when the ammo in his tank shifted from the impact of the hit and it slammed into his back. Now we found out that the hill was zeroed in and they were just waiting for us to come up the hill. Later on we joked that the Germans on that gun crew probably all got an Iron Cross in a 3-day pass for all the carnage they inflicted upon us that day. We ran from pillbox to pillbox, and the infantry who were dug in their foxholes kept yelling at us, "Don't run there, the road, it's mine." We finally got to the pillbox where some sort of command post was set up. There was some sort of, some of our wounded were lying there on stretchers. There were some German prisoners on outside of the pillbox also. I don't remember if this was a colonel or lieutenant colonel said from his men to put the wounded who are on stretchers, to put them on the outside as they were laying in the companionway of the pillbox. And we were really burned up about that, and I felt like he was like killing his own personnel. Then about that time somebody says to me that I had blood all over me. It's then that I finally noticed that I had Holmes blood all over my left sleeve when I had bandaged him in the tank. He was evacuated, and finally our company jeep driver came up to make several trips to get us back to the rear. We left the pillbox and waited for the jeep to drive to come back for us by that bombed out house. We went to a house now, and there were several German dead in there. And then a self-propelled artillery crew set up their position next to the house and started drawing fire on us from the Germans. And we got the hell out of this, really drew fire on us. And finally the jeep drove us back to the rear of the line of fire. I went to the 2nd platoon after this for several weeks, and then rejoined the 3rd platoon with another crew.